The West Live.
The West Live.
With Ben O'Shea for Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858.
Today, the Department of Justice announced a new policy for WA prisons that will allow biologically male prisoners who identify as transgender to be placed in female prisons and vice versa. Under the new regime, inmates must be provided clothing, underwear and personal effects such as cosmetics appropriate for their self-identified gender. The new policy was developed in association with the WA AIDS Council, Curtin University and Transfolk of WA. I'm joined this morning by Transfolk Chair Hunter Gurevich to discuss what these changes will mean. Hunter, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And now, how did Transfolk come to consult on this government policy?
We were brought in by our WAC, the West Australian AIDS Council, as the local community advocate who has access to members of the community who've been at the sharp end of policies that are a little bit prejudiced against their experience when it comes to incarceration.
And why was this an important change to make?
Well, The experience of people who go through the prison systems and are trans or gender diverse has been less than ideal. There's someone who was involved in consulting who, because of being trans, was kept in isolation for more than 5 months, just on the basis of the quote-unquote safety of her and the general population. However, that is a human rights abuse. That is torture. And so it is really important that there is policy in place that prevents that from happening in future to anybody else.
And do you know how many people, how many trans people are currently in WA prisons?
I don't. That's a statistic you'll have to ask the Department of Justice for.
Mm. And so, and it affects biologically male people who identify as women and vice versa. What are some of the challenges that do you think that the trans, non-binary and intersex people face in the prison system?
Well, I would say, as you've just said, it doesn't just affect people who are biologically male or female and identify as the opposing gender. It covers a range of other people, gender diverse people, non-binary people, and also intersex people who are biologically, chromosomally, neither male nor female. So the policy is important to allow people, to allow the prison system, to allow the entire institution to better cope. The current situation, or the previous situation prior to this policy, was that nobody who was actually on the ground in the prison knew what to do because they simply had no guidance. And so it allows, this whole policy is designed to say, well, if you are faced with this situation and you are working for the prison, working for the Department of Justice, this is how we expect you to handle the situation.
And is this come back to, I guess, trying to stamp out ignorance around these issues?
Yeah, I mean, I stamp out ignorance sounds very aggressive, but it's the simple reality that we understand as trans people that the general community often doesn't really know what to do generally, let alone in the prison system, which can be which has a duty of care to people who are in incarceration. So it is about, to some degree, addressing the ignorance of the system itself, and it's about ensuring, it's mostly about ensuring the safety of people who are in the care of the state government.
And as far as what this new policy will do to improve the situation, how do you think like it will make sort of a meaningful changes?
Well, we hope that it will prevent situations, as mentioned, where people are kept in isolation for the crime of being trans. We're hoping that it will mean that there is accountability for the state government as to what is expected and what is unacceptable. And we're hoping that it avoids the situation where people become get extra judicial punishment, which is not the point of the judicial system. The point is that they have committed a crime, they serve their punishment, and nothing more than that, because that is unlawful.
You mentioned the 5 months in self-isolation, and you described it as a human rights abuse. What do you think that would do to somebody in that situation?
Well, it's an irrevocable psychological harm. I'm sure none of us, as all of us have now just been through isolation in our own homes for kind of, you know, us in WA, we've had a minor experience of isolation, and it's been extremely hard for everyone. And so it should be no difficulty for anyone to imagine what it would be like to be removed from your home, removed from anybody that you know, removed from your comforts, not just for 14 days, but for months on end, with no idea of when that will end.
Now, people who are gender diverse will have to apply to be transferred from a male prison to a female prison or vice versa. Do you know what will go into the approval of those applications?
It's a complex matter, obviously, but there'll be a range of people who'll be allowed to advocate for the person in question, and that's probably a better question, I think, for the Department of Justice itself. But it's it will have to do with, you know, the person's actual history living in the world. You know, it's not going to be a matter of somebody who's biologically male is convicted of committing a crime and then arrives at the prison and says, I identify as female. That will not be enough if that is the fear. It will be a question of how people have lived in their lives and the evaluation of experts in the field. It's not simply a matter for everybody to simply decide on in the moment.
Yeah, I believe that one of the factors will be if a person who is born biologically male says that they self-identify as a female and they want to be transferred, if they have a history of sexual crimes against women, then that will be something that is factored in when that application is considered.
Of course, yeah. It is not some kind of whimsy that's being described in the policy. It is a serious contemplation of human rights for everybody involved.
And when these, in your experience, when these issues come up, when there's things like this policy, which has some very, very serious implications, to things like gender neutral toilets, there is inevitably a section of the community who takes issue with this. What would you say to those people?
Regarding the policy or regarding gender-neutral toilets?
Regarding this particular policy and the idea that people who are intersex and trans and non-binary deserve the right to be respected and the rights that all the rest of us enjoy.
I would say the human rights at stake here are inevitably the trans and gender-diverse person, because while violence against women is absolutely real and absolutely abhorrent, and any violence is abhorrent, it is inevitably, the statistics are clear, trans and gender diverse people experience a much higher rate of violence than the general community. So if you are concerned about a gender neutral toilet, or you are concerned about the policy, I would argue that your focus is in the wrong place. If you are concerned about preventing victimization, I would argue that your concern should be for the trans person who is otherwise at risk if they are put in the wrong prison. The risk of violence is unbelievably high. And equally, a trans or gender diverse person using a bathroom that they don't feel safe in really is a risk as well. So I would ask those people to consider who is the real victim, who is the real potential victim.
And I think, as we've seen with all sorts of human rights debates and progress over the years, giving rights to one disenfranchised group doesn't take away rights from somebody else.
Yeah, this is not a zero-sum game.
Yeah, and so looking at this new policy from the Justice Department, it makes me wonder, how is the McGowan government doing on trans issues?
There's always work to be done. We recently have heard that there is a 5-year wait to be seen for youths and young people to be seen at the gender clinic at the Perth Children's Hospital. And that is a very, very long time if you are growing up to be experiencing that. And without any access to care. So we would really like the McGowan government to consider extra funding urgently for that, because forcing children to wait 5 years for care is a very, very long time. I don't believe that there's any other area of the health system that forces anybody to wait for that long for care. And of course, the Inclusive Education WA has been turned into an online module for reasons that we think are not accurate. And so we were hoping that that would continue to get funded and not be turned into an online module. But there is always work to be done. There are always policies. Policies always require renewing. So we hope to work with the government and with any other body that wishes to update policy.
And are there opportunities with a state election around the corner? The likelihood is we'll be seeing the McGowan government back again. That consistency, does that help Transfolk of WA with their sort of policy agenda?
I don't. Does it help or does it hurt? I would say it probably. It's probably six of one, half dozen of the other. We can build relationships with people as they stay in government. However, there is a sense of inertia, I guess, that is always inbuilt with government generally. So I don't like to count my chickens, so to speak.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good idea. Transfolk of WA Chair Hunter Gurevich, thanks for your time today.
Thank you for having me.